Sheffield Live. Made in Sheffield, made by you.
Every Sunday morning at 9, join me, Pete Evans, for Spinning Jazz on Sheffield Live, 93.2 FM. Each week we'll be exploring the wonderful world of modern jazz. From hard bop to bossa nova, from Latin to soul. That's Spinning Jazz, Sunday mornings at 9 on Sheffield Live.
If you like rock in all its forms, you will love Glory Days. You can listen to us locally on 93.2 FM and on the telly, and anywhere in the world on sheffieldlive.org. What do you think, Dawn? You know what, I think he likes it. That's Glory Days, every Monday 1 till 3, here on Sheffield Live. Bosh, bosh. Oops, I've had an accident.
Hello, I'm Harry Wilburn. I present Steel & Wire every Wednesday, 10 a.m. Americana, Bluegrass, American Roots, and more. Lots more. Lots of guests, lots of local music and musicians. That's Steel & Wire, Wednesday, 10 a.m.
You're listening to fabulous Harry Wilburn on Steel & Wire.
It's time to open the music box. Join me, Steve Roden, every Thursday morning between 10 and 12 for music from the 40s to the 90s from my own music collection. Songs I've grown up with, ones I am sure you will enjoy hearing again. Hope to see you then.
If you love new music and you want to discover the best new artists out there, then tune into The Backroom with me, Paddy. I'll be playing the best of new indie, electro, EDM and punk and showcasing new Sheffield talent. Also music news, local and national gig guide and new album releases. So tune into The Backroom every Thursday night between 6 and 7 p.m. here on Sheffield Live, 93.2 FM.
This is Sheffield Live.
Listening to the film show on Sheffield Live. I'm Martin.
And I'm Denise. Good afternoon, welcome to the film show. It's a special week on the film show. We've got a guest. Dave Holloway's joining us. Dave is the co-director.
It costs us a lot to get him in as well.
It cost me a hot chocolate. Spirit of Independence Film Festival is taking place at The Light next weekend. Dave is the co-director. He's going to talk us through the festival a bit later on in the show. And we're going to listen to some of his independent cinema-inspired tracks as well. Hello, Dave. Welcome.
Good afternoon. Thank you for having me here.
Oh, he's got a nice radio voice.
Yeah,
we'll keep him. Yeah.
I was just thinking, you haven't seen my travel costs yet. Way too big as it is.
I'm going to be out of a job.
Martin's all right with his travel costs. Got the bus, haven't you? Got a bus pass.
Yes, it was a bit of a fraught journey in because the students are arriving.
Oh, is that...
It was chock-a-block. Up round near me with... And I think I might have to take a very circuitous journey back home to avoid it all. Via Barnsley or something like that. Well, they'll be going to Barnsley, won't they, as well? Anyway, enough of my travails.
All right.
Okay.
How are you? Okay.
I'm not bad.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Got your journey home planned. That's good.
Yeah. The Toronto Film Festival had some winners. So this is a strange festival in the way that there isn't a golden bear, a golden lion, a golden palm leaf. And many of the awards are done by audience choice.
You've been to this one, though, haven't you?
I've been to it. Actually, that's why I'm wearing my...
He's got the T-shirt.
And look.
Oh, he's got eyes on the back.
I've got eyes on the back of
his back.
And just skipping through, I think we seem to have mentioned all the winners when we were talking about it. So Chloe Zhao's Hamnet with Jesse Buckley and Paul Mescal.
It's like a tasty one for me, that one.
Look, the trailer looks amazing. So it's like it's a Shakespearean story, but maybe not about Shakespeare
the story. But... So I've read the book by Claire Keegan, that's me, Shape of Thing. I can't remember who it's by now. You've caught me on the hop. Margaret O'Farrell? An original
book. She's on the script, isn't she? Maggie O'Farrell's
original,
on the script.
Yeah, so it's her original novel. And the story focuses on Anne Hathaway, the wife of Shakespeare, and their loss of their son, Hamnet. So Shakespeare is like the supporting character in the film. The lead is really Anne Hathaway. And it's a very, very sad book to read. I've saw the play, a bit disappointed by the play, but the film looks a lot more promising, and Chloe Zhao is so good
most of the time.
Yeah. Well, you weren't keen on
keen on Nomadland.
No. Not for everyone. What did you think of Nomadland?
I actually loved it, but I'm really into these improvised, kind of introspective, meandering American landscape movies. That's very much my jam.
I like it. To me, I come out thinking, I'd like to live like that. Yeah. I don't think I should have been coming out feeling like that. It's, wow, I could just go to work at Amazon for a few days a week. Call me cynical.
We usually do, Martin.
Okay, the International People's Choice Award went to Park Chan-wook's No Other Choice, which again we mentioned last week.
Yeah.
Which is about a sort of salaryman worker bumping off what he perceives to be his rivals for the jobs he is applying for. It looks pretty unusual.
Mm.
So I'm looking forward to that one. And then the People's Choice Midnight Madness Award, hence the T-shirt that I'm wearing. Midnight Madness is the cult part of the festival.
Right.
And the winner went to a film which I don't think, if you've never been to Canada or know nothing about Canadian TV, you're not going to know anything about. I certainly didn't. It's Nirvana, the band, the show, the film. And it's a mockumentary linking back to Spinal Tap 2.
Hmm.
Links for all these shows. our writers are just working their chops off. And it's a mockumentary about a small band who are trying to get a gig at the Tivoli, which is apparently Toronto's main indie music venue. And a very, very popular TV series in Canada, which has now been moved to a full movie version. But I think it might be lost on the rest of the world.
Well, even if you just need to have a little bit of knowledge about any local music scene, though, don't you? Would be relevant? No,
I'm not sure. I looked at it and none of it made sense to me. But yeah, that's good, you know. I would imagine maybe the show may be syndicated where we can see it in this country or on Netflix or something. I haven't tried to find it on a streaming platform yet, but I'll probably do that when I get home.
Oh, it looks like Spike Jonze produced the TV series as well.
Yeah, but some characters. Have you heard the series before?
No, I've not.
But I will say in support of abstract Canadian humour, Kids in the Hall is one of the greatest concerts of all time, which spawned one of the greatest comedy movies of all time in Brain Candy. So I'm already, from your description, completely sold on it.
The only reason I was saying is maybe the, you know, general knowledge to people who think, what? What's all that? Or is it a, like a mock Nirvana movie that they've made? And it's not.
Now I've just got I'm crushing your head stuck in my... I'm crushing your head. I'm squeezing your face. Never mind. That's quite obscure reference as well.
Hang on. I hope this is the right one.
Oh, dear.
Big news this week.
A giant of cinema.
A giant.
Yeah, Robert Redford, at the age of
89.
89. Passed away. He'd kind of retired from acting recently.
2017 was the last time he made a film, but even though I think the Marvel Avengers Endgame was the last film he was in that was released, where he played a baddie.
He was a super baddie.
Yeah.
Started a career mostly, started in theatre. We best remembered for some, we were just talking, weren't there, a highlight of some 70s films. My personal favourite of mine is Barefoot in the Park. It's beautiful. And he'd been in the Broadway show of that previously. Yeah. But that's the romantic comedy with Jane Fonda, where he sort of, he plays this leading man who is, puts the leading lady central, and that happens a few times in his career as a leading man. But it's just such a lovely, quintessentially late 60s film, isn't it?
Yeah, it's a great farce, and he plays straight man to Jane Fonda. Really. And I saw that movie for the first time only a few years ago, almost without nothing else to watch, and it caught me off guard with just how relentlessly witty. It reminded me of What's Up, Doc, in many ways. It just keeps going and going and going and going, and gets funnier and funnier and funnier.
I think we've been saying, you know, we overlook so many films. Even us who say, oh, movie literate, you sometimes think, oh, or you think, I've seen that. And again, we were talking about this during the week, you know. Yeah, but it might have been 30 years ago that you saw it, and you would have, you'd just sit and watch these films again with completely different eyes. You know so much more. And similarly, we were saying, you know, there's certain films that we'll watch again now, which we'll never watch again.
Yeah, sad.
Because especially me, I'm going to be dead before I see all these films in my garden.
I feel like I've missed out on a lot of Robert Redford's later career. So he, obviously massive smashes with Butch Cassidy and the Sundance Kid, and that sort of launched him with Paul Newman. So Paul Newman was already a mega star.
But he was the big star,
but this launched him onto another platform, another level, didn't it? The Sting... I could list all. I'm just listing all of his films now, but
I'm surprised you haven't talked about The Way We Were.
I love The Way We Were.
You were threatening
to
play that Babs song, weren't you?
Listeners, next week Martin was going to be off, and I had a whole lineup of Babs.
Babs.
But again, in The Way We Were, he plays this sort of waspish, selfish, you know, privileged white man to Barbara Streisand's central character, who is like a Marxist Jew in like the 1930s America, and they meet at college and they have like a long on-off, will they, won't they, and they probably don't. But he was happy putting someone like that centrally. And I mean, a lot of people say Barbara Streisand is always the centre of her films, and that's...
No.
But, you know... He was undeniably beautiful as well, a beautiful man, and that he often commented that he felt a bit caged by that in the end, because people only saw him as that.
Yeah, I think he was always maybe trying to look for something that would...
I mean, we know the problem, don't we? Blessed by beautiful looks.
Yes, I know. I've worn a hood coming in most weeks.
But then he strikes out and directs, and I'm going to say something controversial here. He was the deserved winner of the Best Picture Oscar for Ordinary People in 1980.
Oh, there you are.
Yeah. I really love that film, and I've seen it.
You didn't say what the film was?
Ordinary People.
Thank you.
Yeah.
Did I? Oh, in that case, Ordinary People. I don't think you did.
Donald Sutherland, Mary Tyler Moore, Timothy Hutton playing this suburban American family.
Elizabeth Montgomery.
Grieving.
McGovern, sorry.
Grieving the loss of their other son. It's such a lovely film. It's such a perfect film. And film bros all over the world are like, yeah, but it should have been Raging Bull.
You don't like Scorsese, anyway.
I do like some Scorsese, that's not fair. But I don't like the sort of... I don't like boxing, anyway. And I'm going to say something else controversial here. I've never watched the whole of Raging Bull. I can't watch films about boxing, and just because you make it black and white, slow motion, and put an operatic score on it doesn't mean I'm going to enjoy it. I'd rather watch Ordinary People. I've seen Ordinary People 3 times. I've seen Raging Bull exactly no times.
Have you seen Ordinary People recently?
About 10 years ago, maybe.
But if you watch it now, that'll be the last time before you die when you watch it.
Oh, right.
Just leave you with that thought.
Cheery. but then it's interesting the timing this week, because we've got Dave on the show because of his passion for independent cinema, but obviously the Sundance Festival, named after his own character in Butch Cassidy and the Sundance Kid.
Yeah. I mean, there's someone who made an enormous contribution to cinema, and especially independent cinema. I mean, Dave, how do you regard him as that initiator, let's say, of cinema in the States?
Yeah, I think he was in the sort of the next wave of what independent was following. You had your first bursts of, say, you know, Bonnie and Clyde and all the Warren Beatty era that came out in the late 60s, early 70s. And it kind of stalled a little bit as the 80s took over and mass consumerism and studios appeared. And then at the beginning of the early 90s or late 80s, Redford just kind of got bored or disinterested in the Hollywood machine. And so he sloped off to Utah and he set up this festival. And then there's an incredible run of about 7, 8, 9 years in the early 90s, where he... His impact could be felt across this enormous outburst of creativity, which gave us filmmakers we're still enjoying today. I mean, you know, Caught Stealing came out only a couple of weeks ago, right? Yeah. Aronofsky is a late 90s kid who came directly out of that indie scene. So Redford's influence is immeasurable in that respect.
Yeah, and it's that thing of I think the effort he put into all that could be seen by the fact that I think he makes 4 films during the 80s. You know, he was incredibly committed to this. This wasn't just, I'll put my name on this and go along to do the opening ceremony each year. He had really invested himself into the whole process of the festival and promoting young filmmakers. Yeah,
very much so. Yeah, if you read Peter Biskin's book on the 90s era, there's some suggestion that Redford did spend a bit of time cherry picking some of the best stuff out.
I'm sure,
and maybe his ego got in the way a few times. But the sensibility behind it can't be denied.
I mean, you can't find anyone really to say a bad word about him. I've been trawling through the obituaries, and
the Mexican army wasn't too fond of him in the late 60s.
Yeah. As a diabetic, I had to take some more insulin after reading some of them. He's almost like one of the last proper film stars, I think.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, there's a reason why he was cast in that Marvel film you mentioned.
Yeah.
It's because he brings to them a gravitas and a sense of old school that very, very few filmmakers. It's him, it's Warren Beatty, you know, these sort of people.
Yeah. Jane Fonda, maybe. Mm-hmm. But there's not many.
Mm.
Faye Dunaway isn't working as much as what she used to, and maybe she didn't quite get that cachet that those three did in it.
I'd agree. I think she was more of an actor's
actor.
I mean, Jack Nicholson, of course, is another great counterculture figure who came out of that era.
Yeah, yeah. But they're very few now, aren't they? Very, very few.
Unfortunately, time marches on.
Exactly.
You know?
So what are some of the films that... So obviously there's the big 70s ones that we know, and All the President's Men is always watchable and sadly very relevant. You were talking about The Natural earlier, weren't you?
The Natural is... I have a thing, when I talk about films that I like, I don't like to say they're the greatest films ever made. They're just my favourites. They're films that I'll sit and watch, and I just love The Natural. And I think it's directed by Barry Levinson. It's got a mythic quality to it, which I think is an enormous film emotionally.
Yeah, it's a very spiritual film.
Yeah. And I can kick myself thinking, you're being pulled in here. You can see all the tricks that are being done, but I love that. And I've got respect for the filmmakers and the people in it. It's an amazing cast. For everyone in it, for the people who made it, I don't think they're trying to do a cheap shot with any of this. They are making something huge, and it's beautiful. It gives it an happy ending, where the book has a completely tragic ending.
Yeah.
But in some ways, the ending fits the film. And sometimes that's the way of adapting something, I feel. Mm. And that works for me in that instance.
And then there's Jeremiah Johnson, which I still haven't seen, but I just know it as the story of a meme.
Absolutely, yes. If anyone who's ever been on the internet ever has seen a GIF of Robert Redford with a big beard out in the wilderness giving a thumbs up to camera, spoiler alert for the ending of Jeremiah Johnson. It's a wild movie. He plays a frontiersman, a bit of an idiot, frankly, who doesn't really know what he's doing and sort of bumbles out believing in this great mythology of the old West, or the current West, I guess, at that time. And he nearly dies, and he goes out in the wilderness. He tries to fight bears and tries to kill animals and hunt, and eventually he becomes this seasoned frontiersman. But it's a absolutely like wild, brilliantly 70s movie.
Yeah, it's one of about seven that he made with Sidney Pollack.
They were long-term collaborators. Yeah,
yeah. As the years went on, he made fewer screen appearances, directed more films.
Yeah, he directed Ralph Fiennes in Quiz Show as well, didn't he?
Yeah, I think I saw that. Actually, I can't remember a thing about it.
Well, it was kind of, it was a sort of a McCarthy type.
Yeah, yeah.
Analogy. But some of his later, I really want to catch up with lots of his later career that I just feel like I've missed. And Sneakers. Which was, what, 90s?
Oh, Sneakers is good.
Yeah. I watched that 2 weeks ago, actually. Yeah. It's a great film.
Yeah.
But the most recent film that I really want to catch up with, what was the film? He's on the boat.
All is Lost.
All is Lost. Yeah.
Which is actually, in many ways, I suppose, a comparison to Jeremiah Johnson. It's him on his own for a long period of time and, you know, very close to death.
And he is just one of those film star presences that you can spend that time with, you know. It doesn't work for everybody.
No.
So I'm gonna check out my gaps of Robert Redford, I think. Especially the later career.
Yes, it should be easy to see how many they've chucked on to streaming platforms all of a sudden.
Yeah, I hope so.
Or taken off and charged for them.
Okay, well, that's a sad farewell then to one of the last great movie stars. We've got some trailer trash. Avatar, Fire and Ash.
I couldn't get 20 seconds into this. Why did you make me watch this?
What, the trailer?
Yeah.
Dave, you look, it's up to bad-mouthing a series of films that we absolutely despise. You're here as a guest. This is incredibly rude on our part. They were now throwing at you to say, come on, say something positive.
I will defend the Avatar films. And I will defend.
Get out!
There's a door slamming. They were, you know what, I tried to watch them on Disney recently, borderline unwatchable, don't care. You watch them in the cinema, they are a full-blown, fantastic 3D experience, which are among the best cinema experiences I've had. The most recent one is unbelievable, 5-star experience. On home, I couldn't care less, but in the cinema, and I'll be there opening day for Farrah and Ash, and I will love it, and I'll walk out, and I'll forget about it again until the next one comes
down. Oh, we've got the right guest.
That's perfect. Lots of qualifications in there for the pariah status that he was about to be awarded on the show. But, I mean, the most peculiar thing about them seems to be this, that once they're out of cinemas, nobody cares.
Yeah, it's fascinating. Yeah.
They've got no... They don't seem to have any impact on popular culture to me, you know. Are there any phrases or catchphrases?
I don't know. I've never seen Na'vi cosplay. This stuff never crops up. But people go and watch it and never, ever bet against James Cameron. Ever. The lesson in history has to teach us that he knows what he's doing. And come this December, the biggest film of the year will be Avatar 3, whether we like it or not.
Probably will be. Then a lot of people voted for Donald Trump.
Well, there's no accounting for taste. Yeah, they wouldn't vote for Na'vi there. They don't like that blue skin.
It's a curious phenomenon, I think. And I mean, he's still got another two in the can, hasn't he? Now, I think I watched half of the first one. And I admit it was at home. It was, but the others, are there any of these films which aren't in CGI animation?
It's a curious question about what constitutes an animation and what constitutes live action. Because I think we've merged it so much that we can neither describe it as a live action series or as an animated series. It contains filmed elements, but it also contains heavily CGI elements. And then you start mixing up live actors with the volume that they shoot in, the VR experiences they shoot in. And then suddenly that line between what is a certain type of film is just completely gone, which I think is genuinely, to his credit, absolutely fascinating. It makes us rethink what quote-unquote animation is.
Yes, yeah. Hopefully, this will, again, this will probably feed into what we're talking about, as we will in a shortly. Well, what is an indie film now, you know, and we'll get to that.
I have opinions.
Yeah, I'm sure, and we're here to listen to them, and we won't argue against them.
No. I am very excited to see the Springsteen Deliver Me From Nowhere trailer. Another biopic. It's out at the mid to late October, 24th of October it comes out. Yep. Directed by Scott Cooper. But I don't watch The Bear. I know you do. Jeremy Allen White playing Springsteen.
Yeah, I've watched it up until... I haven't seen the latest season. And The Bear was too... Amazing seasons and a third season, which
that was there.
We've just finished season two, so I can't speak to anything on that.
But also Stephen Graham appearing as
Hey, no,
Oh, I am your dad, Bruce.
Your dad. He wasn't doing a Scouse accent in the trailer, though. I noticed.
Well, I would have thought not.
Would have added something to it.
What are you anticipating this film, Martin? We had a lot of biopics this year, haven't we? Musical biopics.
I mean, I'm not a huge Springsteen fan. I lost it many, many years ago.
He's one of those artists, though, that even if you like music, even if you're not a massive fan of Springsteen, everyone says you really should see him. I haven't. Have you ever seen
him? I've never seen him, but I'm Blinded by the Light, the film about the obsessive Springsteen
set
fan.
In my,
it is a wonderful movie.
It is, it's a boy meets a friend and he gets him into Bruce Springsteen.
It's about fandom and the joy of loving music and artists.
One of the best films set in Luton. my parents live in Dunstable, which is very nearby.
One of the best movie storms of all time in that as well, in my opinion, when he's outside barraging and they're projecting the lyrics of Springsteen songs all over the houses around him.
And all his lyrics fly away. Mm. Okay.
I'm indifferent at the moment. Let's say I'm waiting to be convinced on that one. I will go and see it, though. But yeah, it's... I might be converted again. I bought Born to Run when it came out. Way before you two were born, I'm sure it was. On these things we had called 12-inch vinyl LPs that we put a needle on. I loved that. And then sort of punk happened and it was the sort of thing you turned your back on. And nothing else that he did after that. Not that I listened to it that closely. Well, ever converted me back.
I just find him an interesting character as well. I mean, he is
working
class.
Hats off to him for what he's been doing at his gigs recently. Yeah. You know.
But also he comes from a working class socialist sort of ideal and he was just adopted in the 80s by the right wing as born in the USA, man. Yeah. That's not what he's
about.
Which
was completely... Again, it's like it was taken the wrong way, wasn't it? And unfortunately become an anthem for what he was singing against, but you know, he comes from, you say, a blue collar background, and I think essentially most of his music promotes that blue collar culture in the best possible way, not the, let's say, jingoistic like way that that particular song was taken up with.
Well, talking of music, Dave is very kindly. Saved us the bother of dinner playlist this week.
No show tunes, Dave.
And we are going to start off with a bit of a repeat, but we love Bill Callahan so much. Why have you picked this song, Dave, for us?
So, in a previous life, before I ran a film festival, I used to work in film. I used to work in behind the scenes. I used to, you know, shoot DVD extras and interviews with crew and cast and so on and so forth. So I had the great privilege in the early 2000s of working on a number of British movies. But the first one I ever worked on was Dead Man's Shoes.
What a gut punch of a film.
Extraordinary piece of work and completely skewed my experience in filmmaking that going forward, because everything I worked on after that wasn't an instant classic. Yeah. I didn't understand why. I mean, I should stress, I was only really present on set for like, I think, 5 or 6 days, really, of that movie. But A, it's an extraordinary movie. B, it's like the birth of Wart films, and it's the film which immediately put Wart films on the map. But I think, most importantly, before I worked on films, I made corporate videos for local companies, and I was making a corporate video for the Nottingham Career Service one day, and we'd cast a bunch of actors from nearby Carlton Studios, and we brought them all down. They were talking about what it was like growing up and passing your GCSEs and all the sort of stuff you talk about in social programming. And one of them came to us and said, I've got an audition for a film next week. Sorry, tomorrow. Do you mind if we shuffle around my schedule so I can film in the morning so I can go through auditions? And we said, look, of course you can do that. So we did all that for him. And then this young actor went off and got the role, and that was Toby Kebbell for Dead Man's Shoes.
Oh,
so I feel if I hadn't been a benign and wonderful producer and actually let this young man go to his audition, I don't think we'd have Warp Films. I don't think we'd have Toby Kebbell's career. Prince of Persia would have no villain. I think, really, I'm kind of responsible for most cinema going forward from 2002.
You heard it here first.
Let's have the
track. So we're going to play some music now.
Let's play that.
We're not worthy.
Wrestle in Vain, and this is Smog, for which features in Dead Man's Shoes.
Can't be held responsible for the things I say, for I am just a vessel in vain. Can't be held responsible for the things I see, for I am just a vessel in vain. No boat out, no ocean, no name there, oh no hole. And it's not a strain at all to remember them with a smile. My ideals have got me on the run towards my connection. With everyone, my ideals have got me on the run. It's my with everyone. Such free reign. For a vessel in vain.
Smog, Vessel in Vain. You've cut the long note at the end. There we go. Smog, Vessel in Vain from Dead Man's Shoes, picked for us by Dave. Dave's our guest on the show this week, and he's come to talk about the Spirit of Independence Film Festival that is showing at the Light Cinema next weekend. Dave, how long have you been running the Spirit of Independence Festival, and why do we need an independent film festival?
So why do we need another independent film festival? It's a good question. So Spirit of Independence has been going for about 6 years. We started out very, very DIY. In the Aberdare Picture House, when water was still dripping from the ceiling, and we've slowly built up. We've been to a number of venues across the city, but I think there's many different interpretations of what independent cinema is. I think to many people, it sort of means Wes Anderson or the Coen brothers, or a sort of typical Americana, quirky Americana, small town.
Yeah.
And it's made by companies which sound independent but are in fact sort of kind of funded by majors.
Huge machines.
Absolutely. Mm. And there's nothing to take away from those films, because I love those movies, and it's a vital part of the film industry. But what we try and look at is maybe the films which we make are sort of flying under the radar. So not sort of like the what you would call dross, which just drops on streaming, but films which are of equal quality of maybe some of the independent films you'll see in cinemas across the city, but maybe just don't get there because of lack of opportunity or of equity of their ability to sort of get distribution. So what we try and do is we try and fill that little gap in between. We try to offer films you never heard of, made by filmmakers you never heard of, but actually are making incredible pieces of work, and who just what they need really more than anything else is that leg up and that audience and that validation of being in a festival.
Mm.
So that's the sort of thing I think we like to offer to our audiences.
And you've moved around different venues as well. So you're keeping it Sheffield, but Aberdare Picture House, you were at the Showroom for a few years and at the Light now. The Light's a great venue, isn't it?
Love the Light.
And they've really committed to highlighting your films.
Absolutely.
You run other events there throughout.
We do, yeah. We've been doing monthly screenings of cult films across the year there. They've been terrific to work with, actually. They're a chain, but they've got a real independent vibe to themselves, and they really lean into, I guess, minority programming or cult programming, and they've been very, very supportive of us. It's a giddy thrill to go to the Light, as I tend to do most weeks, and watch the trailer for my own film festival in front of a movie I'm desperate to see, and it's they've been lovely to work with and very accommodating. We're really looking forward to being there next weekend.
So let's have a look at the programme for this year's festival, which you very kindly brought me fresh off the press. I proceeded to spill coffee over it immediately.
You did, shortly before hitting me in the face, yeah.
You got off lightly. Who believed me?
But there's some... So, first of all, let's look at the features. So that you've got how many features in there?
We've got eight features across the weekend.
And they include premieres and a 45th anniversary screening of The Fog as well.
That's right, yeah. So Friday night, that's the opening night, we've got a wonderful Australian found footage horror movie called Nightfall, A Paranormal Investigation. So that's the UK premiere of that. And then we like to pair movies on our opening night. So yeah, absolutely. Afterwards, we've got the 45th anniversary screening of The Fog. We were going to wait 5 more years, but we figured we couldn't just wait. So we're paired them together. So that's a lovely opening night.
45 is a nice number, I think.
It's a round number, let's face it. Yeah.
Yeah.
It's the perfect speed of a record.
Yeah.
There you go.
But that's going to be great. That's a lovely 4K restoration we've got there as well. So that's going to look beautiful up on that screen. Mm. And then, across the festival, we've got films that range in budget, range in ambition. So we've got a lovely sort of two-hander that was shot across, I think, like a week, called Tummy Monster, which is a really brilliant, like, psychological tense drama about two people in a sort of quite a confined experience. I don't really want to give the plot away because it's so good. And then we got all the way up to something like Redux, which is our closing film, which is one of those American indies I mentioned, which is a brilliant slice of neo-noir.
Yeah, that looks really intriguing.
It's got a great premise. It's got a premise that's so dark, I'm not sure I necessarily want to sort of speak it at lunchtime on the radio, but it's a compelling, just Google it, it's a compelling concept, and it's a really, really great film.
What I'll say is time travel always fascinates me, because there's so much other stuff it draws in.
We've had this conversation before, yeah.
Yes. Anyway... This is the film show on Sheffield. Oh, we've done that.
Oh, I do want to pick out on Video Dreams as well, because we do love a VHS story on here.
Absolutely, yeah. So Tom Seymour's been making movie documentaries for a long time. He's been working in exploitation cinema, and he's one of those people who came up sort of through the trauma school of exploitation filmmaking. So he's pure, absolutely in camera effects. Lovely attitudes. Great sense of humour, and it's a documentary all about his constant struggle to try and get on the shelves of Blockbuster Video, and how he could never quite get his movies, and it sort of tracks his 30-year career making these schlock fests that are that are immense fun. I should probably also point out we have a really interesting film called Fall to the Top, which is a world premiere we're showing on the Sunday.
Which is almost sold out, I think.
It's almost sold out. I think there's a couple of tickets left if you find a canny way of booking it. And that's that wonderful British genre of the gangster movie.
Gangster
of the hard man raising Mockney. Up through the ranks.
A go-go.
But this film was written and directed by a guy called Pete Hurst, who is a part-time actor. A bit time is patronising, but he's a supporting actor. He sort of appears in various, you know, these TV shows, Gangs of London, Essex Boys. He's a big guy.
Sort of limited by his
his physique, absolutely.
Yeah. I'm coming.
Wonderful, kind-hearted person. But yeah, big, burly intitude and sort of disappointed at the lack of roles that he was getting in the mainstream cinema. He basically wrote, produced and directed his own movie, which he stars in, and he's got a very wide range of casts and people you've heard of. His partner shot the movie. He funded it himself. He cast Paul Chuckle from the Chuckle Brothers as a hitman.
When I was
looking
at your sort of showreel thing, I had to watch it. It was only the second time I saw it. That is Paul Chuckle.
Yeah. That was exactly what I was going for. I'm delighted that's the effect. Yeah. I wanted the double take. Yeah.
What's that? No.
But I also want to just highlight. You have a lot of shorts.
We have a lot of shorts.
So you've got a lot
of
opportunities for people to show their work.
Absolutely.
As part of this festival. And you've got them grouped into different strands, haven't you?
That's right, yeah. I mean, you take the approach, like, making a film is a difficult thing to do. It's an expensive proposition that takes up a lot of your time and your effort, and you rely on the kindness of strangers and your family so much. And so having it premiere on YouTube and sharing it around a private link to your family and friends is not really how these films should end. So what we like to do is provide as much of an opportunity as possible for up-and-coming filmmakers to get their shorts, to bring their families along, bring their grandparents along, watch the film they made in their back garden. So that's sort of like, you know, the lower end, as it were, the more DIY end of it. And then we go all the way up to established filmmakers working in short films. We've got a number of strands. We've got a strand called Youthful Spirit, which is all films made by students in colleges and schools and universities in the region. We've got like Rising Spirits, that's kind of first-time filmmakers, independent spirit films made by under their own steam. We've got Northern Spirit, which is a collection of the best films made in the north of England over the course of the year. And then like Emerging Spirit, which is maybe slightly more established short filmmakers who are making maybe their second or third short. So we'd like to give you a really comprehensive overview of what constitutes independent in this instance.
And Lone, which is your Emerging Spirit featured film.
That's right.
That was a winner from last year's.
So that was a script competition that we ran a couple of years ago. So every year we put together a prize offer. So you submit your script, and then our team of judges decide which one is most practical and would work best, and we like the most. And then we offer funding and production support opportunities. And then that film is then premieres the next year at the festival. So Lone was the winner of the Emerging Spirit competition in 2023. It was in production in 2024, and we have the world premiere of it in 2025. This is the third one we've done, I think.
It's interesting what you were saying about this whole business with short films and being able to see them, be able to get them some exposure. And it baffles me why there isn't a channel on Freeview that is just short movies. And you think maybe the BFI could fund some of that, or maybe even a cinema chain. And it's just there, if it's on for 6 hours... in the evening, 6 till 12, and, you know, it runs a whole gamut of films. And maybe the films could be on for a month, several times during, or once a week during that time. And you think there's an inexhaustible supply of content.
There is. And most it's very good these days as well.
Yes, yeah, exactly.
Yeah, it's much easier to make than it used to be.
Mm-hmm. Absolutely so. I mean, I guess financially, that's always a difficult sell. Come and watch a bunch of short films you've never heard of.
You've
need
integrated
a fan of it.
Them into supporting your features.
Well, that's one thing we try and do. Absolutely. And I'd love to see that at a regular cinema screen. I'd love to see Caught Stealing going alongside a lovely new, something that matches the tone of it.
Yeah.
That's something that we try and do. Yeah, so each of our features has a supporting short, which sort of leads in tonally speaking. And again, it's for a first-time filmmaker to have their film on the big screen, watched by their family and friends, watched by industry insiders, other filmmakers, in front of a much bigger kind of proper, quote-unquote, film.
Mm.
That's a fantastic experience.
I was going to say, that will attract people that maybe don't normally come to cinema because they're coming to support a friend or family.
Absolutely.
And opens them up to a different...
It works both ways, doesn't it?
Yeah.
You see a feature film on the big screen as well and realise what you're watching.
How can we get tickets for Spirit of Independence Film Festival? It's on next weekend at the Light from Friday the 26th to Sunday the 28th.
That's right, the opening night is Friday. That's just two films in the evening, and then we've got a full blocks of short films on the Saturday followed by a couple of features, and then Sunday is one block of shorts and most features in our closing film is Redux Redux. The easiest way, frankly, is for you just to Google Spirit of Independence Sheffield. But if you want the web address, it's soifilmfestival.com. And we're on all the socials and all that sort of thing.
Yeah, get your tickets and we'll see you there.
Yeah, it's going to be a great great festival. We're really looking forward to it.
What's your next song, Dave?
My next song is Claw Machine, which comes from Sloppy Jane and Phoebe Bridges, which appeared on the soundtrack of a film which I absolutely loved, which is called I Saw the TV Glow, that came out last year.
My favourite film of last year.
And deservedly so. It's a wonderful Lynchian movie which speaks so much about identity and the impact of pop culture, and it has a glorious soundtrack which is woven throughout the film really, really tightly.
It absolutely broke my heart at the end. I was so upset.
I haven't really stopped thinking about it since I saw it. It kind of crops up in my thoughts most days. You really can't. It's a wonderful film.
Marvellous choice. Okay, here we go. You're listening to the film show on Sheffield Live 93.2 FM and on digital. And this is normally our review section. And Denise was going to be reviewing her Blu-ray box set of German films.
No time for that this week.
Yes, and you didn't bring it either for us to look at it and stroke it. So I don't think she's even watched any more since
last week.
Can I get on with my review? We're running against the clock
here.
Come on. You've forgot the Blu-ray. Let's leave it there. And I haven't been to the pictures this week. There wasn't much out that I wanted to see. But I did catch up on an interesting film on Netflix, The Royal Hotel, with one of my favourite actors of the moment, Julia Garner. And it's a film set out in the Australian outback with two American backpackers who run out of money and have to take a job out in the middle of nowhere in a isolated mining community in a big Australian pub. Not a good idea, you would think, for two attractive young American women. And as soon as they're there, they're in the middle of a horrible beer and vomit fest. And this pub seems to have attracted every piece of masculine toxicity that there is in the surrounding 1,000 miles to annoy them. It's a very tight 90 minutes. And I thought it was brilliantly done. And it doesn't go over the top. You think this is just going to be, you know, it'll be one outrage after another, but it's a very, very sort of film that builds up in its dread and very slowly turns the tension up. And it doesn't have this explosion of violence at the end, which makes it all the more realistic, I found. It's not a film that the Australian Tourist Association, I think, will be promoting. And it's probably the worst vision of Australia I've seen since Wake in Fright. Have you seen that?
Wake in Fright, yes.
Wake in Fright is probably the scariest film about Australia ever made.
I've seen Babe 2 Pig in the City is also quite terrifying. That's also not a joke. Anyone who's seen it will know it's genuinely terrifying.
Yes.
Film.
Didn't that make the actor go vegan?
Wake in Fright would tell you, never spend a night in the outback getting drunk with Donald Pleasance, and I'll leave it there. As I say, brief with that, and we're going to go on to our third piece of music.
Yes, this is Anyone Else But You by the Mouldy Peaches from Juno, which I think to many people is the archetypal 2000s independent movie. I'd like to dedicate this to my wife for it not being the song we got married to, which is the other song from the soundtrack, but I felt this was a slightly more obscure choice.
You're a part-time lover and a full-time friend. The monkey on your back is the latest trend. I don't see what anyone can see in anyone else but
you. I kiss you on the brain in the shadow of the train. Kiss you all starry-eyed, my body swinging from side to side. I don't see what anyone can see in anyone else but
here is the church and here is the steeple. We sure are cute for two ugly people. I don't see what anyone can see in anyone else but
the pebbles, forgive me, the trees, forgive me. So why can't you forgive me? I don't see what anyone could see in anyone else but
I will find my niche in your car with my MP3, DVD, rumble pack guitar. I don't see what anyone can see in anyone else but up, up, down, down, left, right, B, A, start. Just because we use cheats doesn't mean we're not smart. I don't see what anyone can see in anyone else but
you. You are always trying to keep it real. I'm in love with how you feel. I don't see what anyone can see in anyone else goodbye.
We both have shiny happy fits of rage. You want more fans, I want more stage. I don't see what anyone can see in anyone else but
Don Quixote was a steel driving man. My name is Adam, I'm your biggest fan. I don't see what anyone can see in anyone else but you.
Squinched up your face and did a dance. Shook a little turd out of the bottom of your pants. I don't see what anyone can see in anyone else but you.
But you.
This is the film show on our final lap now, looking at new releases coming out next week.
Although, just mention, we haven't reviewed them this week, but Steve was out yesterday.
You're going to see that
I'm
this
definitely
week?
Gonna, yeah, we'll include it in next
week. Maybe
week's
you do
show.
A review of it next week. Yeah. Along with your much belated review of the Wreck and Ruin Blu-ray box set.
Never going to happen.
Never going to happen. right, next week. Big releases, One Battle After Another, Paul Thomas Anderson's,
highly anticipated, isn't it?
Yeah, new epic based on a Thomas Pynchon novel, as was Inherent Vice, with Leonardo DiCaprio and Benicio Del Toro, been shot in VistaVision. So I'll have to see if the Barnsley Paramount are going to show it.
Trip to Barnsley.
In 70 mil, you never know. We might be able to go and see that in all its glory. There's also a new British film called Brides, which is directed by Nadia Fahl and is the story of two British teenagers who make a trip to Syria to get away from the racism that they're facing in school. And just to become independent. Of course, they're going to Syria. And problems ensue from that. I think it's very much based on the story of Shamina Begum and what she has gone through. Mm. And the fact that she went out there with a friend when she was only 15. And, of course, things went tragically wrong for her. And she remains, even now, stateless. And the Home Office won't allow her to become a British subject again. Something can... I think it's pretty disgraceful myself. But anyway, on to a lighter film. You can have Emma Thompson toting guns in the snow in Dead of Winter.
You can't wait for that.
No.
There's some musical fans. There's some interesting musical films. Sound of Music 60th anniversary, various screens this week at the Light. One of my personal favourites, Show Tune Time, Hamilton 10th anniversary, screenings of that at the Light as well. The Light also doing a preview of the British film I Swear, which features Maxine Peake, Peter Mullen, Shirley Henderson, about the young Scottish man Don Davidson with Tourette's. Looks interesting.
I remember that documentary when it was on years and years ago.
That trailer is amazing. That's an example of how you cut a trailer, the I Swear trailer.
Yeah.
It's really excellent work.
Yeah. And I can remember that. And it was treated as a joke by lots of people, wasn't it, when it first came out. It was really funny, you know, and... the true tragedy of living with that, I think, took a while to come out and be understood,
And one mentioned, Sally Potter's first film is showing at the showroom in various times this week, Against the Grain, The Gold Diggers, selected screenings for that. It features Julie Christie, 1984. Good film.
It is.
Let's hear your last track.
Okay, so as I mentioned at the top, the definition of what independent is, I think, varies wildly. And what I like most about this next song is it's the theme song to the Teenage Mutant Ninja Turtles movie, which was, up until really the 90s and Robert Redford's impact on Sundance and what in modern independent cinema, was the highest grossing independent film of all time for many, many years.
Great.
Having beaten, I think, Freddy's Dead, The Final Nightmare. So, turtle power.
Partners in crime. See you at the festival.
So much information you have been hosed down with. And thank you so much, Dave, for coming along. Really appreciate everything you've talked about. And for a great music selection.
Thank you very much.
Beautiful.
No Carol Burnett at all. I'm as happy as Larry. okay, we'll be back next week. And I will be here. And
enjoy your movies if you go and see any.
See you next week.
See ya.
On the half shell, they're the heroes for. In this day and age, who could ask for more? The crime wave is high, with muggings mysterious. All police and detectives are furious, cause they can't find the source of this lethally evil force. This is serious, so give me a quarter. I was a witness, get me a reporter. Call April O'Neill in on this case. Hey, you better hurry up, there's no time to waste. We need help, like quick on the double. Have pity on the city, man, it's in trouble. We need